If you were unable to attend this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, we have good news for you. We produced an audio DVD of the conference. The recording contains all of the speakers' presentations, my Divine Service sermon, and the hymn sing. We'll send you the audio DVD for a donation of $300 to Issues Etc. before Labor Day. Click the audio DVD logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org, or you can also order by check. Make your $300 check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Order your audio DVD of the 2015 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to continue with part two of a weekly series we're doing with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris of the Ruth Institute on the sexual revolution. Today we're going to take up the myths and illusions of reproductive freedom and contraception and abortion. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is a regular guest. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the new book, The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Why do you speak in terms of reproductive freedom as myth and illusion?
Well, you know, we normally think of freedom as being either the ability to not be interfered with and in doing what you want to do. That's kind of a libertarian way of looking at freedom, that nobody's going to stop you from doing something. Or we think in more broad terms, we might think of you're free if you have the opportunity to participate in the free institutions of society. You get to vote, you have to have a jury trial and things like that. And so those are kind of that's a kind of procedural view of freedom. Reproductive freedom tells us that we get the right to have the outcome that we want to have happen, regardless of what we do or don't do. So we're entitled to have as much sex as we want without ever having a baby. And somehow this is thought to be the same as having the right to not be imprisoned against your will, you know. But the fact is, we don't have perfect control over our reproductive plans, whether to have a baby or not have a baby. And so the idea that your freedom depends on being able to have as much sex as you want without a live baby is really confusing the idea of getting what you want with other kind of more modest ideas of freedom.
So it's a one-way freedom, really. It's a freedom only to reject the child.
Well, you know what? When this book that we're talking about, Todd, I wrote the essays in this book spread over, you know, like a 20-year period of time. And originally, that's how I conceived of it, that it's only the right to say no. But now it has morphed in the years since I first started talking like that. The thing has morphed to the point where people think they actually do have a positive right to have a baby whenever they want to. And so what that's doing is commercializing the baby and creating the concept that the baby's like an object that you can go buy if you want one, just like everybody's free to buy a car if they want one. You're free to obtain a baby if you want to obtain a baby. And so I want to say that there's something very dangerous and dehumanizing with thinking of another human person in those kind of terms. You know, if we think that babies are the proper object of choice like this, what it turns out to mean is that we're free to dispose of a baby if we don't want one, and we're free to purchase a baby if we do want one. And that seems to me to be a formula for not freedom, but really the law of the strongest.
I've always found it deeply and sadly ironic that the proponents of reproductive freedom will wax eloquent about government intrusion into the bedroom or the doctor's office, but the way that they have achieved their ends have all come from the hand of the highest powers of government. It's all been imposed from the top down. What are your thoughts there?
Well, that's certainly true. You know, the abortion license has come about entirely from the United States Supreme Court. And when states have tried through democratic procedures to limit abortion rights in some way or another, they're highly constrained by the United States Supreme Court as to what they can do and how they can do it. And so there have been some meaningful and important restrictions on abortion that have been enacted through state legislatures. But the states and the democratic process is always at loggerheads with the Supreme Court, you know, you might say the ultimate elitist institution of our country at this point.
You've written this. I want you to explain it. You say legal scholars will argue that the right to privacy upon which Roe v. Wade depends exists nowhere in the Constitution. You say, I go one step further. The concept of reproductive freedom, which Roe attempts to establish, is incoherent. It truly is irrational to insist that nominees to the Supreme Court pledge their allegiance to the doctrine of abortion on demand. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is that, you know, look at it this way, Todd. What if I said that you have a right to a job and that you have a right to a job regardless of whether you show up for work or not? You know, I think most people would say, well, wait a second. If you don't show up for work, you don't really have a right to get paid. There's some connection between cause and effect. You know, I have a right to health, good health, but I don't have the right to eat as much as I want of anything I want and not get high blood pressure or obese or all the other negative consequences that you can have from eating a bad diet. In other words, you don't have a right. It's incoherent to say that you have a right to participate fully in the cause of something without ever having to experience the effect of the thing that you're doing. And that's really what the sexual revolution has tried to create, a world in which you're allowed to have unlimited sexual activity, but you never have to have a live baby. You know, they can't make it so you never have a baby. They can only make it so you have a dead baby, right? Because babies are going to happen as a result of sex. If you have sex often enough, if you're of the appropriate age, you know, there's a sooner or later you're going to end up with a baby. And so that's why the whole ideology really needs abortion on demand to back up its claims. You know, that's the only thing reproductive freedom can possibly mean is the unlimited abortion license, because that's what it takes, no matter how much you promote contraception, in order to back up that ideological demand of as much sex as you want without a baby, you've got to have abortion to back it up. And so that's why I say that the thing is incoherent. And, you know, the idea that we've gotten ourselves twisted into knots like we have, and, you know, I don't think there's any serious question about that it, the most important consideration of whether a person's going to be on the Supreme Court or not is the question of what do they think about abortion, you know, and that seems to me to be an indicator, a very clear indicator, that there's something very peculiar about the so-called right to reproductive freedom, that it has to be defended like that, and that it has to be defended at all costs at that highest level.
I'm intrigued by something you said a little earlier, and times have changed, of course, with the advent of in vitro fertilization. Now there is the attendant right to have a baby, and you argue in your book there is no inherent right to have a baby. What do you mean by that? That just seems to fly in the face of the mindset of reproductive freedom.
Yes, it absolutely does. And I say it proudly, there is no right to have a baby. What you have a right to, Todd, what I have a right to, and what every human person has a right to, is the right to try to have a baby. And the way you have a baby, the way you try to have a baby, is first of all, you have to find a person of the opposite sex who is willing to cooperate with you. That everybody has a right to do, you know, and if you are able to cooperate together and you're fortunate enough to have a baby, then you have a right, the two of you have a right to that particular baby. But I don't have a right, you don't have a right, nobody has a right to say, I get to have a baby just because I want to. No, you might not find anybody to cooperate with you. You might have medical difficulties that prevent you from achieving your desire, your hope, your goal of this good thing, obviously a very good thing to become a parent, that's a good thing. But just because you desire it doesn't mean that you have a right to be successful at it. And I think it's important, very important, that Christians insist on this point, because the alternative is really too terrible to contemplate. I mean, on the one side, we have the view that everybody has a right to have a baby because they want one. That turns the child into a commodity, and that makes the child a product, and the adult or the parent a purchaser or the crafter, the technological creator of this cultural artifact called the next generation. But the Christian view is and always has been that each and every person is an unrepeatable, unique gift from God. And that means that I'm a gift from God, my child is a gift from God, my parents are a gift from God. So my dad and mom are older than me and for a long time had power over me. I'm older than my children and for a long time had power over them. But on a deep metaphysical level, we're absolutely all equal. We were all brought into being because God loved us into being, and hopefully our parents accepted us in love and could continue that process designed by God. Seems to me this is the only true basis for lasting equality and the only true basis for a truly humane society. The gaps that we're setting up between the generations now through the ideology around third-party reproduction, artificial reproductive technology, that whole commercialization of the person, that simply cannot be a good thing. And the further down the pike we get, I think, Todd, the more obvious it's going to be to everybody that it's not a good thing.
With just about a minute or so here, 2 minutes or so, what role does contraception on demand play in the illusions, the myths of reproductive freedom?
Well, contraception was supposed to be the key that was going to make it all possible. You know, if we could just come up with a reliable contraceptive pill or some reliable contraceptive method, now it's injections and long-acting contraception and things like that. If we could just come up with that, then people would be able to do whatever they wanted. And you could have sex anytime you want with anybody you want and not have to worry about the long-term social consequences of that because you're eliminating baby. So, you know, what we need to see about that as Christians, and, you know, now speaking not theologically, but simply from the natural sociological perspective, is that once people take on that view, they're going to get themselves into situations where they're being sexual with somebody that can't sustain a pregnancy. You know, you're going to get careless. You're going to be, you know, messing around when you're in high school, or you're going to be messing around with somebody else's husband, or, you know, these type of things because you think you're safe. And then when contraception fails, which it sometimes does, all forms of contraception fail sometimes, the failure rate for the pill is estimated to be about 9%. So, you know, think about that for a minute. That means, you know, 9% of people who are using contraception, who are using the pill, are going to end up pregnant. So if you're having sex with your next door neighbor's husband and you're the one who gets pregnant, that's a pretty big disaster in your life. And so now you've got a person who thinks they need abortion or who is going to end up becoming a single mother. But in no case have you delivered to the child their birthright of having a mother and father in loving relationship with one another and with you, the child, you know. So in both cases, whatever the mother decides to do in that situation, the rights of the child have been damaged.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's author of the new book, The Sexual Revolution and Its Victims. You'll find a link to this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Jennifer, thank you very much for being our guest.
You're very welcome, Todd.
We hear these terms like autonomy, self-determination. They ring very loudly, resonate with the bell of our rugged individualism as Americans. But they ring hollow when it comes to considering the life and the rights of our children. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.